Well, it's another week, and Chuck, not much has really changed. So I guess I know what we're talking about next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Barry, it's very good to be back with you here in the studio. Again, you're up here due to technical issues and the fact that you're traveling around all over the place anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of what I do for fun, Chuck.
You're right.
I hop in the car and I drive hours at a time just to hang out with my friends and
there you go.
And record great radio. So
128 miles just one way just to record some radio.
Yep.
You'll do something else while you're here, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I think we already did that.
We already did. I've already done three things since I started out this morning before I got here. So anyhow. No, but Chuck, here we are. We are in the later days of August. We're now 3 weeks into August, and the biggest thing that is on anybody's talking points, well, anybody who's got a streaming service that they're using to watch the inanity that is the Democrat National Convention is that convention. Now, last week we chatted a little bit about one of the luminaries that were going to be blessing us with their wisdom and knowledge at the Democrat National Convention in support of the Democrats' nominee, Joe Biden, and, of course, now his running mate, Kamala Harris. You know, that be by Bobana, Banana, Banana, Fobana, yeah. Be by Kamala.
Taking no chances on being racist by mispronouncing her name, so we pronounce it
every
possible
which way,
way
we can think of. That's right. Yeah, I'm not racist. I just don't know much. So anyhow, what we had, Chuck, was, and we all expected this, was on Monday night, our own former Ohio Governor John, son of a mailman, Kasich.
Just ask him, he'll tell you.
The Republican Governor of Ohio, who has not changed his party affiliation, Chuck. And I'm going to say that again, so everybody understands this. John Kasich has not changed his party affiliation. Because the Republican Party he's a part of is no dime's worth of difference than the Democrat Party he just spoke to on Monday night. Okay? Kasich went to berate all of us for why we can't have unity and come together around Joe Biden as a candidate because of how much damage Trump has done to the country. Chuck, John Kasich's only telling you the partial truth. Donald Trump has done damage to John Kasich's political hopes.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely destroyed his political hopes because John thought he was going to be the great, and I'm sorry, this sounds racist, he was going to be the great white savior of 2016. He was going to come in from a Midwestern battleground swing state with his experience in balancing the budget. Ha, ha,
yeah,
ha.
Pardon me while I laugh.
And if you've listened to any of our other previous programs on this, you can go back through our archives on principledpolicy.com and pull them up. You're going to hear how John Kasich did a bunch of smoke and mirrors moves and really never balanced a budget. He just pushed spending and paybacks offline for a number of years until he could get out of Dodge before it all came collapsing down around the ears of the next person who happened to step into the box and be stuck underneath the rubble. So Johnny Boy knows how to basically advance Johnny's own purposes in life, which is Johnny. Chuck, you would be amazed. Maybe you wouldn't. Some people would be amazed at the number of former Kasich confidants, staffers, hangers-on, members of the Ohio Republican Party hierarchy who, after Monday night, finally are expressing their true opinions of John Kasich openly on social media. And the two words that are most predominant in almost every narrative that's there are the words arrogant and self-centered.
Yeah.
That John Kasich, if there wasn't something you could do to advance him, he treated you like you didn't exist. He would come into a room, like say you had a line of people there and to shake his hand. If he looked at you and didn't think you were a mover shaker or could give him money, he would completely ignore you and go on to somebody else. Because that's John Kasich. He makes these snap value judgments on people. I got news for him. He's deadly wrong about his value judgment on Joe Biden. But then again, maybe he's not. Because in John Kasich's Republican Party of the establishment Rhino Republicans. Joe Biden is a middle of the roader. He could almost be an establishment Republican if he just switched party monikers. The mainstream Republican Party. Oh, no, wait a minute. But the Republicans are different, aren't they? The Republicans believe in life. Then if that's the case, then why haven't they ended abortion? They have the ability to do so.
Yeah.
They've had majorities, and they've had majorities in chambers and the governor's seat. Oh, wait a minute. We're talking about John Kasich, though. This is the same John Kasich that not once but twice vetoed the heartbeat
bill,
abortion law that would stop 95% of all abortions from taking place in Ohio because it would treat the unborn human being like a real person and say that once a unmistakable sign of life like a heartbeat is detected, that baby's protected. That wasn't good enough for John Kasich, so he vetoed it not once, Chuck, but twice. Okay?
Yep.
Two times he vetoed the bill. But aren't the Republicans for more capitalism? Well, this is the same John Kasich who created Jobs Ohio, which was a public-private partnership, which is basically fascism in economics.
More or less,
It's fascism in economics, where certain players in the market get to tell all the other players what to do. Why do you think that the big push has been on and is still on to press the Equality Act or the SOGI bill, which basically is a lot of the big money employers getting behind the gay rights movement to use it as a hammer against their smaller competitors who are more agile than they are and can adapt to market conditions faster than these big lumbering hulks can. But if they can basically tie them down with all of these lawsuits and questions about whether or not they're fair or not, and if their hiring practices are good, and they have to spend all this money to hire special HR people or to defend against all of these claims of discrimination that are going to be thrown at them willy-nilly. Well, what does that do? Well, that puts them on the same par as the big boys, and then the big boys can use their largeness to swamp the little guys because the little guys aren't fast enough now to get out of the way and get ahead of them.
Yeah, the little guys can't handle the big waves.
Nope.
And this basically is essentially a way to get them to be swamped by the big waves. So you said SOGI, and you may need to elaborate on that a little bit.
The sexual orientation gender identity bill to basically normalize homosexual behavior and treat it like it's like race, gender, ethnicity, okay, as a protected class. So that if you have let's say you're a small mom and pop grocery store, and you want to hire somebody to, stock your shelves. Well, you get two candidates to come in there, and one of them is clean cut, nice person who's conscientious and is saving for college. And you get the other person who comes in, and let's say they've got a purple mohawk, and they've got earrings, and they got the ear stretched out, and they have tattoos all over them, and one of them happens to be a rainbow flag, and you decide you're going to hire the clean cut person who looks like they're conscientious and will work hard. Well, you don't even have to say anything. That other person can then go to the Civil Rights Commission under this law and make a claim that the reason why you didn't hire them was because they were gay. And you should. And even though that's a question you can't ask anybody on an employment interview, because it's federally prohibited to ask certain types of questions, you can't ask about their health status, you can't ask about a lot of things. You can't ask about that, but because they could tell that you could tell without them volunteering it that they were engaged in homosexual behavior, and therefore that was the only rubric you used in order to keep them from getting the job, keep from promoting them, or you let them go from a job, they can take you and tie you up. It's at least $10,000 in front of the Civil Rights Commission, and that's without an attorney.
Yeah.
Okay? But these mom and pops aren't going to be able to handle that, and what's going to happen is the big box boys will send people to do that, to tie them up so that if the big box store in town's having trouble because there's a couple of mom and pops that are people like and they're going to and they feel like they're losing market share in that town, well, that's a way to fix the problem is, okay, we'll just send some people in there to ask for jobs, and when they're denied, then they can turn around and file a claim with the Civil Rights Commission against mom and pop because the only real reason must have been animus against the fact that they perceived them to be transgender or perceived them to have homosexual desires. Again, it's specious. It puts everything in the driver's seat of the complainant and nothing in the driver's seat of the defendant who is going to get charged with this kind of stuff. It's absolutely ridiculous, but that's John Kasich's world. You know?
Yeah.
That's what he wants. By supporting Biden, he's showing he wants that because part of Biden and Harris's platform is that they want to expand homosexual transgender rights out as far as they can get them. So we want to kill unborn babies and expand all those rights, and we want to crush economic vitality, entrepreneurship, and capital under the heels of government controlling everything. This is John Kasich's perfect world. So he's not necessarily wrong. He wants unity. But his problem is what he's trying to do is audition so that he can be part of a unity ticket with a Democrat. Now, you and I talked about this offline a little bit. There is that very, very outside possibility that if Joe has a cognitive breakdown here in the next couple of days or during the campaign, that the DNC could take another tack entirely. They could say Joe's physically unable to move forward, and because Kamala was his running mate, not theirs, his, and then there will come questions about whether or not she constitutionally meets the requirement that she could be president because of her parentage and because of her background. Then they'll be looking for a unity ticket. Well, maybe John Kasich's aware of this, and he's trying to position himself, because then let's say they go to somebody like a Michelle Obama. It really wouldn't be a surprise if she picked somebody like a John Kasich to be her running mate.
No, we talked about it's been done before, the national unity ticket kind of an idea. Yep. And if you don't understand what that means, it's sort of a throwover to a parliamentary. You will see things in Parliament in Britain sometimes. They'll talk about a national government. What does that mean? That means more than one party. They'll have somebody from Labour, somebody that's Tory, somebody that's UKIP, somebody from, they constitute the cabinet on the basis of giving everyone a voice, essentially in proportion to the number of votes that they will bring in Parliament.
Right.
We don't have a parliamentary system here. Nonetheless, there are people who really think that a national party or national unity party ticket would be a good thing. That, of course, is absurd, because there are party loyalists who wouldn't cast a vote for a... Will they drag people from the committed middle? Yeah, they might.
They might get a few, yeah. Well, as you can see, because guys like Mitt Romney and the Susan Collinses of Maine and the Lisa Murkowskis of Alaska, you know, those establishment Republicans who have skin in the game to try to keep the game playing as long as it can. Now, that was the other thing I think I talked, maybe we talked about, we didn't talk about it online, but I talked about it, I think, earlier today when we did our monthly call-in on the radio station, and that is the whole idea that the establishment Republicans who were abandoning Donald Trump in favor of supporting Joe Biden, or just not supporting Donald Trump, are upset because Donald Trump represents something that they cannot handle, which is a change of the rules of the game. Joe Biden represents more of the same game that they all can play.
Right.
Because then they're all like, that's where the real unity is. It's them unified against the voters of the United States, because they use the specter of the other party getting in control as a means to cow, cajole, and overwhelm the voters into blindly supporting whatever they put forward. So when they put a Mitt Romney up for president, oh, you're morally obligated to vote for him because look at the other side. Look how bad they're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what happens when you have a situation where you have a Donald Trump? Donald's like, no, I'm not playing this game. I'm not going to get in there, and if I say I promise something and then turn around and I can't get it done because the other side. No, I'm going to go and beat the other side up until I get done what I want, and I'll go around them if I have to. And that changes the entire framework of the game and the rules of the game, and the establishment can't handle that because they've had it comfortably, and it's how they make their money.
Right.
It's how they keep their troops. Folks, I'm going to tell you right now, the pro-lifers should be the most ashamed people on the face of the planet, because we have been played like dupes for decades. We have been told that as long as you elect a Republican to office, to president, we'll end abortion. How's that working out for us after 47 years?
0%.
0% chance. Okay, but in this last 4 years, there have been more pro-life wins, both in Congress, in policy, and in the courts, than we've seen in the last 44 years or 43 years combined. Why? Because you have a president who believes in appointing judges who will rule by the rule of law and are strict constructionists of the Constitution. Remember, Donald Trump did not appoint John Roberts. George W. Bush. But he's appointing jurists, and it's so evident right now, Chuck, in 2020, that Donald Trump has done such a fine job of his nominees getting into these judicial slots. And I'm not just talking about Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, okay? That's what everybody focuses on. I'm focusing on a little circuit out on the West Coast called the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, where in the last 2 months, there have been three rulings that could have been written by Clarence Thomas as a conservative. Why? Because for the last 4 years, the Trump administration has been replacing retiring and
dying
judges on the Ninth Circuit with strict constructionist originalist jurists. And it's paying off. The most liberal circuit in the United States of America, the last three major rulings they've had on social issues have all gone conservative.
Yeah, there's been a gun issue. There was a voting issue,
I think. And then the immigration issues.
Yeah.
Okay? Guys, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention to that. Pay attention to the fact that the reason why Planned Parenthood and NARAL are scared to death now of us moving more bills up through the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is because Trump has now placed four new members on the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and every last one of them is a conservative. A strict constructionist originalist. One of them was the head of the Federalist Society, Chuck.
That says something.
That says a lot. The Fifth Circuit, it's the same way. The 11th Circuit, it's the same way. Every federal circuit court that can have a judge appointed by Trump, we've now had, I think, nearly 200 federal judicial nominees, not counting the Kavanaughs, not counting Gorsuch. Over 200 Trump federal court nominees from the district to the circuit court level that have been put on the bench during the Trump administration. Folks, you're seeing a bellwether change in the way the game's played.
Which is why November is so important.
And you and I've talked about this before, and I'll say it again. I have always been one of those people that when everybody comes up and talks about and wringing their hands about how this is the most important election in my lifetime, and if we get this one wrong, it's all over with. And I look at them and I laugh in their face because it's like you're putting far too much into one solution, one political solution. And what I'm looking at when you tell me this is a candidate like George H.W. Bush or like Bob Dole, or like George W. Bush twice, or like Mitt Romney, or like John McCain. But now you're putting, and in 2016, it was Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Most important election of our lifetime. I didn't buy that either, did you?
No.
No. 2020 is a different story. Folks, as you can say, maybe I've seen the light or felt the heat, one of the two. But what I've actually seen is the proof of concept. And the proof of concept is we now have a president in the office who is saying that he will do something and then doing it.
Wasn't that Everett Dirksen?
Yeah.
When we feel the heat, we see the light.
That's right. Talking about Congress. But here's a president for the first time in our lifetimes, Chuck. We weren't born when Calvin Coolidge was in office, sadly enough.
Right.
And nobody since Calvin Coolidge has been worth two nickels. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am talking about most people's idol, Ronald Reagan, too, who was a complete disappointment.
Yeah.
He is an absolute disappointment. So much potential, so little delivery. With Donald Trump, it was so little potential, and the delivery has been, dare I say it, Chuck, huge!
Yeah, huge.
Huge! It's been huge!
Yeah.
When it comes to pro-life, when it comes to Second Amendment, when it comes to securing our borders, when it comes to getting us back to the America that most people thought we had, there is no comparison.
Well, okay.
There are no comparisons.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because where has his greatest opposition come from?
His own party.
His own party.
Absolutely.
Here he is doing everything the party says they stand for. Pro-life.
Pro-Second Amendment. Pro-capitalism.
Pro-legal immigration.
Absolutely.
All these things. And what is the party doing? Every time they can, they stand in his way.
Or try to cut him down like Mitt Romney.
Try to cut him down.
Right. And if you the two biggest naysayers against Donald Trump right now are John Kasich and Mitt Romney, who are the two men that Donald Trump whipped like a redheaded stepchild in order to win the presidency.
Well, okay. Let's just talk about that for a minute. It's considered pretty bad when the governor of a state doesn't get at least 50% of the vote in his own primary.
In his own home state primary.
He beat his chest and said, I won Ohio. Yeah, you did with 47 or 48% of the vote.
I think it was 43.
That could be.
It was 43% of the vote.
It was under 50%. What does that tell you? That means 50% of the Republicans, more than 50% of the Republicans in your state, can't stand the sight of you.
Either like Donald Trump more, or couldn't decide between the two of you, or disliked you both enough to say, I'm just passing on this one. Okay? And that's fine, because you got all flavors there.
Yes.
And that's okay. And it's okay, but I'm going to say it again. I do believe that, honestly, this is the most important election in our lifetime, because we've had a few changes that have happened. Folks, we have over rampant Marxist socialist communism in our streets now that is being supported by leftist mayors and governors who can't seem to get out of their own way fast enough to let them tear down the rule of law, law enforcement, our constitutional protections, and your personal rights and your rights as a business owner. And Joe Biden and Kamala, whatever in the world she wants to be called, I frankly don't care. I'm going to call her goodbye after November. They want to have more of this. They back the protesters. Let's stop calling them protesters. They're not protesting against anyone. They're rioters. They are attempting an internal coup against this nation. And I'm going to guarantee you, Chuck, that if enough pressure is put on a lot of these state leaders, whether it's from Trump and the administration or it's from the voters in the seats, where they say they feel like they have to open the polls in November and have live voting, I'm going to be the first to say, just be prepared, and it won't just be in the cities, it'll be in the suburbs, and it may even be in some of the rural areas, especially if they think turnout will be high, that you'll see the BLM, Antifa, /SJW protests break out near polling places in order to keep people away. Because that's how you win.
Yeah.
That's how you rig the system. So what happens? Let's say you're in a small town. Okay, let's say you're in my little town. We got 30,000 in the county. Let's say 40% of those is registered to vote. That's 12,000 people. Let's say 80% of our county is going to turn out for the elections. Well, that's about 9,800 people to vote. Let's say they're voting in the largest precincts. We got about 30 precincts that are the good sized ones that'll take more than a few hundred votes apiece. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that probably within the weekend leading up to the election, there'll be a lot of license plates coming in from out of state and out of town showing up all of a sudden, and we're going to end up getting demonstrations in front of those key polling places.
Yes.
To keep people away, especially polling places that are near areas where people who are of advanced age live. I see it happening, folks. Now, you may think I'm a complete nut, complete conspiracy theorist, or I frankly didn't take my medicine today. Any one of those may be valid. But I don't feel I'm going to miss my guess too hard on this one. Because I think the whole issue with this whole thing about can we take this over in the middle of a big liberal leftist city is a warm-up run for then let's turn it out into the red suburbs and see if we can't get the same thing accomplished. They've been trying, Chuck. We just sat down and talked to a couple of people today that talked about how they tried to do a move in Lancaster, of all places, to go and tear down statues, and they bust in a bunch of the liberal SJWs to go do it, and they were met with folks who found out about it and decided that they were going to go out for a nice little evening walk near the statue. Oh, and they were going to be, you know, exercising their right to carry concealed or carry open.
Yeah.
Trust me, guys, these are warm-up runs.
Well, and it wasn't just once. Apparently, it's every Wednesday.
Apparently, they're trying to do it every... Guys, these are warm-up runs, okay? Let me just not kid you here. There is a larger game afoot, and it has nothing to do with granite, marble, and iron, and brass, and whether or not they stand or they fall. It has to do with whether or not you are going to be intimidated against going out to vote. That's what this is getting down
yeah,
to.
Yeah. So as you were saying, this is all, look, this whole mess is political theater. It really is. And what's interesting about it, I mean, we brought up Kasich. We've talked about Joe Biden and all this. Personally, I have not watched directly the Democratic National Convention, and I won't be watching the Republican National Convention for the most part either.
Right.
First of all, I got over my addiction to national conventions, oh gosh, I don't know how many election cycles ago. We were just discussing some old things that we did, Barry and I, and with an old friend who was in it with us. We were state leadership for a third party for a number of years. Now, where that went was nowhere. But then again, those of us who were involved in it really didn't expect it to go anywhere. What were we doing? We were providing what Mike Perutka, who was the 2004 candidate, always called a lifeboat. He provided a lifeboat for those people who could not bring themselves to vote for George W. Bush, and then followed by that for John McCain, and followed by that Mitt Romney. Just simply couldn't do it. And of course, there was under no circumstances was I going to vote for a Bill Clinton or a Barack Obama or an Al Gore, on and on and on.
Right.
That wasn't going to be happening either.
Well, that's because when we went over to that third party, our whole idea was is that we don't play the lesser of two evils game.
No.
And I get that because a lot of people right now would chide us for talking about supporting Donald Trump because, well, he's evil too. You know, he had affairs and blah, 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 blah. He's saying, and he tweets and he's nasty and everything else.
Yeah. Well, he's not a nice man in his public persona regarding if he gets hit.
He's going to hit back.
He's going to hit back and he's going to hit back hard.
Right. So he doesn't turn the other cheek. So, okay, folks, that's fine. But then again, I would rather have somebody overtly and by themselves hitting back and not turning the other cheek than I would have someone like, oh, I don't know, Barack Obama, or let's name about every other Republican or Democrat who's ever held the office, who hits back by acting like they're above it all and then sending out their minions to attack the person or attack the organization and tear them down, i.e. what Obama did to conservative groups with the IRS. The way that George Bush basically tried to marginalize churches and other places. Folks, there's a whole long list of if you weren't like right there with them, you know, and supporting whatever they did, they may not come out and say something publicly, but their hangers-on and their minions would. You'd get the coordinated attacks, and you'd get those from both sides. So let's not kid ourselves.
Right. Yeah, so... Trump isn't nice in his public persona. I've seen some of the presidents that we've elected who have been nice in their public persona. And what that means is that basically they, quote unquote, reached across the aisle. And what that means is they said any cockamamie idea that the socialist, Democrat, progressives came up with, they were like, well, we can find a compromise position that adopts 90% of this, but eschews the other 10 to keep the base happy.
Right, exactly.
So it's a 90-10 proposition.
Or an 80-20 at best.
And then when they run again for re-election, they say, but we stopped this from happening.
Exactly. Yeah, that 10%. Oh, look at us. We stopped that.
Yeah.
We let all this other stuff go through the door like a raging elephant. But hey, we stopped that little bit.
Okay, this is the difference between the NRA, the National Rifle Association, and Gun Owners of America.
Yeah.
NRA gives away about 75%, saves the other 25%, and says, look what we stopped them from doing. By giving them handgun control, we managed to save long rifles.
Yeah.
And single-shot shotguns and a bunch of stuff that everybody says, well, that's fine, and we want to save those too. What are you going to do when they come to get the single-shot shotguns and the long rifles and the other things?
And use the precedent of the fact they've already taken the handguns in order to get them.
Exactly. This is why we were third party. And actually, you know what happens is when you're third party – You know you're not going to win.
Yeah, you're not under any delusions.
Yeah, we didn't fool ourselves that Mike Perutka was gonna be the president of the United States.
But we did like to dream that it could be possible.
And, yeah, we like to dream that it could be possible. And you know, when God's in the mix, stranger things have happened. Like That's Donald right. Trump got elected in 2016, which wasn't supposed to happen.
No,
and you could see that with people like John Kasich beating their breasts at the debates and saying, I'm the adult in the room.
Well, you know, according to John Kasich, St. Paul was going to basically punch our ticket to hell because we didn't vote for him.
Well,
it wasn't that we voted for Trump. Wasn't that you voted for Trump? It was because you didn't vote for him.
Right, exactly. And I remember, I mean, directly coming out and saying, if you're a Christian, you should vote for me.
Yeah,
because I am a Christian. Well, you, I can't see his heart, but I see his fruit.
Yeah, and it's
its fruit is pretty rotten, sitting on the tree, because nobody wanted to pick it, and it's sitting there rotting. And right now, basically, John Kasich has committed political suicide.
Well, for the most part, again, there's that outside shot that Biden will collapse before they get to November, and the DNC will rush in to fill the hole with somebody like Michelle Obama, and as part of the whole unity idea. Oh, you know, and we believe in racial equality, so we'll bring the Republican across who will get us Republican votes away from Trump in order to, you know, try to take away from both sides of the equation so we can win.
Smart political strategists know that's the way to lose the lose the outer edge of from both parties.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And to permanently taint yourself. But that being said, there are other things going on. I mean, there's local stuff going on that we really need to... we really need to discuss. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Well, let's talk about the fact that we tried to go to a restaurant today. And
hold that thought for just a second, because there is one more thing on the national level that
does
tie into what we were talking about just a minute ago.
Okay.
And this is coming from Congressman Bob Latta from the 5th Congressional District up in Northwest Ohio.
Uh-huh.
He's up in the Fremont area. Lives up near Bowling Green.
Yeah.
And he just put out, as we're recording this, he tweeted this out like half an hour ago. Says, this week, Democrats are rushing new U.S. Postal Service legislation to the House floor without standard committee procedure or input from Republicans. Language within this bill could threaten the integrity of our election by forcing absentee ballots in Northwest Ohio, because that's where he's from, to be sent through the unreliable Metroplex facility in Pontiac, Michigan.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, gets better. He goes, I have been engaged with the Postal Service for years to try to fix the problems. The Ohio 5, which is his congressional district, is experiencing when their mail goes through the Metroplex facility in Michigan rather than through sorting facilities in Ohio. So in other words, in general, the mail has been, when they route it up through Detroit, when they route it through Pontiac, Michigan, some stuff happens. So Northwest Ohio is not served very well by that happening. So he says this, there is a major issue with all the mail that comes in and out of our region, but it's especially concerning when it comes to the sanctity of voting. Earlier this year, Secretary of State Frank LaRose, remember that name, ladies and gentlemen?
Yes.
You're going to hate it after a while. Asked that all ballots be sent to sorting facilities within the state of Ohio, but the legislation that's being rushed to the House floor could prevent the Postal Service from doing this. According to local election officials, in 2016, more than 1,000 absentee ballots were delayed or lost in Northwest Ohio during that year's election.
Because they went to Pontiac.
While it does not appear that any races were ultimately affected by this discrepancy.
Says who?
How would you know?
Yeah.
How will you ever know? The stakes are heightened this election where absentee voting will be much more prevalent. This rushed legislative process has produced a bill that would make the problem significantly worse in Ohio. What a surprise.
Jack. There's a shock.
You don't think that they didn't think this ahead?
What's interesting about this, there are places in Ohio. People don't know this. I sent a package to Ashland, Ohio, which from here, you can drive here, there, in an hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe.
Maybe an hour and a half at most.
It's north of Mansfield. And I sent it to Ashland. It takes 3 days to get a package from Central Ohio, Newark, to Ashland, even though it's an hour and a half drive.
Did it go through Pittsburgh or Newark, New Jersey?
Pittsburgh.
It went
to a sorting center in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh, where it sat for 2 days.
It sits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's an extra travel day because it has to go all the way to Pittsburgh and come all the way back.
That's right. It does.
Not
no kidding, folks. That's what happens.
And That's the regional sorting center. In Cleveland? No. In Toledo? No. In Dayton? No. Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the problems. Now, if you don't think that there are people in the post office that aren't partisans who have no problems mutilating, destroying, how they would know you are one party or another?
They open them up.
They open them up.
Come
they
on.
Could open them up.
Come on. They can open them
by,
up.
Open by mistake. How many times have you gotten something that comes in a post office envelope that says open by mistake?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what would the county election board do if they got one in an envelope that said open by mistake?
How can you count that ballot?
They'd toss it.
How can you count that ballot?
Exactly.
Because you don't know now, if it was cast by the person or not.
And would you know that your ballot had been tossed because it had been tampered with? No.
Yep.
You have no way of knowing. All you know is you sent it in. This is why when in the spring when we had to vote, when we basically, they Mike DeWine essentially completely screwed up the election process, and the state legislature let him do it.
Mm-hmm.
That in order to protect a lot of their incumbents who were about to be tossed out on their ears, my district included. What they did was they created a monster. I actually went down when I got my absentee ballot, which was basically just in time, even though I had sent for it like 7 days earlier. It was, I think I had 4 or 5 days to get it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the marking debacle about we didn't know what date to put on it and all that.
Right.
I took it down and dropped it in the box at the Board of Elections. I'm not trusting. I use the U.S. Postal Service every single day. And
absolutely
for the most part, they do a good job. But when it comes to anything political, no, under no circumstances.
Okay. And the reason why all this is happening and the reason why this absentee ballot stuff has now become like very heightened and even including the fight over the Postal Service is because of the responses that the states have had to the COVID issue. We're upset about whether or not we can open polling places, which we didn't do in Ohio in the spring, stupidly, because we're afraid that the poor poll workers, the older folks, will end up catching COVID and dying. Or we'll spread it around everywhere. So we're going to go ahead and allow you to vote absentee, but then we're going to change the whole rule, shut everything down the night before or the day of, and then stretch it out a month and tell you have to mail it in. And then if you mail it in, we overwhelm the post office to the point where tens of thousands of ballots were never delivered.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, they found 3 crates of them sitting on a dock. I forget where it was. There was like 16,000 ballots that didn't get counted. But it didn't affect the outcome of any election.
No.
Of course not.
Of course it didn't. Because if the people that couldn't vote, well, they probably wouldn't have voted anyway.
Well, here's another piece on this, Chuck. Now, again, so we have Exhibit A trying to use COVID in order to change an election. Here's Exhibit B. Now, because of the specter of the death bug, COVID... We have an article that just popped out in the Dayton Daily News today. Headline, Montgomery County, that's Dayton, folks.
Dayton.
Montgomery County Court suspends jury trials for the rest of the year. Chuck, we're in August. That's four and a half months,
yeah.
So the order issued by Administrative Judge Gregory Singer allows judges to hold jury trials that involve unique and unavoidable circumstances. Now, that's undefined. So the order says it was issued to protect the health and safety of everyone involved when a jury trial takes place, including court staff and members of the public involved in trials. For example, it's not uncommon for potential jury pools to be upwards of 50 or 60 people. Before the pandemic, those individuals would sit in a room close to each other while they were either rejected or selected to serve during a trial. The Montgomery County order suspending trials is in contrast to what other courts in the area have done. Dayton Municipal Court has begun scheduling trials again, and trials are ongoing in Warren and Miami counties. Montgomery County Common Police Court handles felony criminal cases and civil cases where a large amount of money is disputed. How would you like to be in a criminal case where you couldn't get a jury trial, Chuck?
No, thank you.
That you were being charged with a capital crime and you couldn't have a jury of your peers there.
This is one of the most dangerous things I can think of. It's bad enough that juries can be manipulated, but when you're not allowed to have one, we have reached the point where the tyrant's knee is on our neck, to go back to make a George Floyd reference. The tyrant's knee is on our neck, and we can't breathe. The right to a jury trial of a jury of your peers and to plead your case is an absolutely fundamental right of the Republic. If you remove that right, we no longer live in the Republic. We are now in the democracy that everyone, like Barack Obama, brought up last night, we're destroying our democracy. We don't live in one. We live in a republic. But a perfect example of a democracy is a lynch mob, wherein the majority put in their say, and if the minority, who is the defendant, says, "But I'm not guilty," and the lynch mob says, "Well, we think you are, and therefore you're... Well, we vote to string you up."
Yeah.
So it's 25-1 is the vote, and the majority wins. In a republic, 12 get to decide, but you've got other people involved. You've got a defense attorney. You've got
witnesses. You got prosecutors. You got everybody.
You got an appeals court. You got all these things to basically establish your innocence.
Right.
It's frightening.
Well, let me go on and read a little bit more out of this article. So they go on to say the order might not have a large impact on the local justice system. You know, so they talk about the local justice system. They're not talking about the broader, because you just brought up the appeals court. I can see a number of defense attorneys going right to the appeals court and saying, "Strike this case because my client was not given the right to a jury trial."
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because that's a guarantee under law, folks. That's a guarantee. So it says it may not have a large impact on the University of Dayton law professor Thomas Hagel to the Dayton Daily News, because jury trials are not as common as some think. It doesn't matter they're common or not. They're a constitutional guarantee.
Is that why Franklin County called me to be a juror 3 times in 8 years?
Right, exactly. Yeah, because it doesn't matter. There's not that many jury trials, Chuck. Because most cases plead out before reaching a jury. And quote, this is from this law professor, "It simply backs up the number of jury trials that the judges are ultimately going to have to address. There is really no problem if the defense goes along with it." Well, I'll just say right now, any defense attorney who's stupid enough to go along with this thing isn't representing the best interests of their clients.
The only thing I can tell you is the possibility, the only attorney I can think of that would go along with it would be a public defender who's saying, "This guy is guilty of sin, and he's not going anywhere with the jury."
But again, that's a question for a defendant to be able to you have no confidence in counsel and get another trial.
Bingo. It's like the old thing where the guy says, "I want another judge. I want another, you know," he's got a public defender. "Judge, I want another attorney.
I want a different counsel." Yeah.
Why is that, sir? He doesn't pay any attention to my case. And the judge says, "Is this true, counselor?" And he says, "I'm sorry, I wasn't listening."
Yeah, no doubt. That's about truth, isn't it? Okay, so basically here it says, in the event the defense wants the trial to happen, now the order allows for a judge to decide if it should. So again, this is a judge deciding whether or not somebody gets a jury trial. I don't believe that it's ever been left up to the judge to decide if a jury trial
Never.
Is. It has always been the defendant saying, "I want a jury trial," period.
You have to request it, but it's a rubber stamp. They have to give it to you. If there is a provision in the Constitution under which you get a jury trial, I forget what it is. Mm-hmm. Seventh Amendment. It's $25. It's a civil suit, $25 or more, I think. Now, $25 in 1787 is a little different than $25.
It's a lot more than
it was a lot more money then. Nonetheless, that's the guarantee.
Yeah, well, here it is. In suits at common law, you're right, Seventh Amendment. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20.
$20.
$20 in 1787 money. That's a lot of money.
That's
now.
A lot of money, yeah.
The right of trial by jury shall be preserved.
Yeah.
Chuck, I'm sorry, but your dictionary definition of preserved, does that mean thrown away at the whim of
no.
a judge?
And the key word there is right.
Right of trial by jury shall is the other key word. Didn't say may. that it's somebody's decision to make. SHAP
right.
means
right.
it's a non-optional. We've talked about legislative language before and the shalls and the mays being directive or permissive.
Or permissive.
This is a directive. Shall be preserved and on fact trial by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined and no fact tried by a jury shall otherwise be re-examined in any court of the United States and according to the rules of the common law.
That's the single jeopardy clause.
Prohibition to, and then the Sixth Amendment is on criminal prosecutions, which again, talked about the court here handles large dollar civil cases, which is the Seventh Amendment, because anything exceeding $20 in 1787 is large dollar amount here now. It's like $5,000.
It's not quite that high, but it's high.
It's high enough. It's thousands. It reaches that level.
It's
Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution, which, folks, has not been abrogated. It's not a dead letter. It's still a living, active. It is our form of government. We need to follow it. Sixth Amendment, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall, there's that name, word again, shall enjoy the right, there's another word, to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense.
It's interesting this comes up, because what's one of the main complaints against Kamala Harris when she was Attorney General in California?
That she just trampled all over the Sixth Amendment.
She hid exculpatory evidence.
Which is evidence you can use in order to prove yourself innocent.
And not just on one occasion.
Right. She did it multiple times.
That is one of the main complaints in cases like General
Flynn.
Flynn.
Yeah. Michael Flynn's case.
Exculpatory evidence was not only just hidden, but destroyed.
Yes.
That there are other people whose trial, like for instance, everybody wants to trial Nigel Farage. They want him tried. And yet I'm willing to bet a whole bunch of exculpatory evidence. It will turn out that a lot of exculpatory evidence lost, stolen, destroyed.
Yep. Of course.
This is one of the, this is why we live in a perverse governmental situation.
Yes.
Because this kind of thing, the people aren't up in arms demanding that judge be impeached. The judge who made the ruling,
right, who issued that order,
needs to be impeached.
Needs to be impeached. That's right. Now, here's another way. Okay, now, Chuck, you talked about this. That's basically called nullification. That is a way you can talk about nullification, is to take an official who is exceeding their authority, who is thwarting the constitutional framework of our government and removing them from office. That's a way to nullify a illegitimate order, or to nullify the future of a legitimate order. Here's another way to do it. Now, the illegitimate order I'm talking about now is not this judge.
No.
I'm talking about Governor DeWine and this whole mess with all the masking stuff, which gets us around to what we talked about earlier today about lunch. But here's an article out of the Ohio Star newspaper, whose new managing editor is Jack Windsor, the reporter for Mansfield, who's giving the governor such a hot foot all the time.
Yeah.
You got to love this guy. Yeah. Like, if you're on Facebook, like Jack Windsor on Facebook, this guy digs in. He asks the hard questions, and it's so much fun to watch. But here in the Ohio Star, there is an article headlined, "Ohio Sheriff Sees State COVID Orders as Disorderly."
And there's an important word in that, disorderly.
Uh-huh. That's right. It's without order.
You people think, well, it means his desk's all messed up.
No.
That's not what it means.
No, it means that it's against order.
It's against legal order.
Exactly. He's got it. So Warren County, Ohio, that's down around Lebanon in those areas, down near Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Warren County. Warren County, Ohio Sheriff Larry Sims agreed to talk to the Ohio Star about Ohio Republican Governor Mike DeWine's COVID policies. Sims was respectful in his tone toward the governor and quick to point out sitting down for an interview on such a sensitive topic is outside the norm. The sheriff said he has communicated with DeWine over the years, dating back to his time as Ohio Attorney General, and has offered insight on situations, issues, and even legislation. According to Sims, DeWine and he have been respectful in their communications. Sims believes his insight has either fallen on deaf ears or that DeWine agrees to disagree. COVID policies, however, and the executive branch's management of COVID strike a chord with Sims. Sims says he and the members of their office care deeply about everyone's health, and they have deep sympathy for those who have lost loved ones. Yet the bottom line for Sims is what he is seeing in his community. Suffering from government policies is far outweighing suffering from COVID. Sims acknowledges early on that the virus looked extremely dangerous to large numbers of people. Even now, he understands the governor is not in an easy position. Sims says he does not underestimate the pressure DeWine is under or the magnitude of his decisions. The sheriff does not understand why information that can be found on the Ohio Coronavirus website, the CDC website, and from other reliable medical sources that round out the picture of COVID in Ohio get left out of the press conferences. I might have an answer for him for that. They don't fit the narrative.
They don't
That's
fit
why.
The narrative, yeah.
Okay. Quote, we are seeing only the fear side of this issue. It began with crazy high numbers the first few weeks. We were being cautious, but looking at what was happening. Within a few weeks, we saw real numbers, and it should have been apparent to a lot of people early on. But a lot of people trust the governor, the government, and what they're being told. Many people don't do research, said the sheriff. From the very beginning, we've been scolded, but it doesn't make sense. Says Sims. He continued with, most recently, they've restricted drinks after a certain hour, but increased the number of drinks you can pick up with your to-go order, a violation of open container laws.
There you go.
Now, folks, I hadn't even thought about that one, but he's dead on.
He's dead on.
He's dead on. Quote, with respect to cutting off drinking at 10 p.m. that can result in someone piling up five or six drinks before 10 p.m. and sitting there drinking them until 11 p.m., how does any of that make sense? The sheriff is concerned about the long-term effects of COVID beyond the health impact. Quote, we are putting a stranglehold on businesses with restrictions that will result in businesses in Warren County shutting down for good. In Warren County, the sheriff's office has made it the modus operandi to reach out to the county prosecutor, the primary legal counsel of the office, seeking understanding and interpretation of the orders. Complaints and reports involving the orders are turned over to the health department. Sheriff Sims indicated that if the health department found someone in violation, the department could file an action with the court, and if the court issued an order, then the sheriff's office would be responsible to serve and execute the order. Sims says to the health department, quote, they have been outstanding, they are phenomenal people, they have been working with businesses to get them reopened and are not being heavy-handed, but of course, their orders come from above. I'm going to add a little codicil in there. I know a little bit about one of these situations because I've talked to the state legislator who's from that area, who had a business owner come to him because the health department was threatening to shut him down. And basically, he was ignoring it, and they were coming in, and he called the rep. And basically, the health department was like, well, we'll have the sheriff come in and close you down. And the business owner said, call the sheriff. And obviously, they did. And Sheriff Simpson basically told him, we're not going to enforce that. So basically he says here that, you know, okay, this is great, but their orders are coming from up above, and that he's upset because he feels that inconsistency is major in this issue, and it's a big trigger for him. It says that after DeWine tested positive and then twice negative, Sims had some hard questions he delivered in an email to the governor, and here's what he said. Quote, you test positive, but for some reason, once you're back in Columbus, you test again. You don't have faith or trust that test?
Ouch.
Do you even know how many of Ohio's positive numbers are from the antigen test? How many of the positive numbers in the U.S. are from the antigen test? Because if you tested and it was positive and then all of a sudden it's wrong, so how many of these original numbers are right or wrong? Now that you may have been a false positive, do you have any idea of how many of Ohioans have tested or a false positive? Of course, you do not know, because if you knew, you may have to stop all the restrictions across Ohio and let us live our lives, wouldn't you? This is coming from the sheriff to the governor.
Okay,
this is
perfect.
This is a public email. So, and he's basically, what is also difficult for the sheriff to reconcile is how Warren County is assigned a code orange threat level, given the area's COVID numbers compared to the population. Warren County has recorded 1,962 cases of the entire epidemic. As of August 18th, 79% or 1,555 people are counted recovered. This leaves 407 people positive in Warren County in a population of 230,000. More perspective on that number in the last 14 days. The county has seen only 10 hospitalizations involving COVID. It's not certain whether the number includes people in the hospital primarily because of COVID or primarily for other medical reasons but contracting COVID. It's hard for, quote, it's hard for me to see the justification in these policies when you see the real numbers. What is the end game here? Is it zeros across the board? Whatever it is, I hope we know and it's here soon, concluded Sims. So here's a sheriff who's done. He's done. He's now asking the tough questions, and he got to the right answer. You don't know, and you don't want to know because it doesn't fit your narrative. And that's what he got down to.
And from what we know, we've got a pretty good handle on the fact that your numbers are way off.
Absolutely.
Okay,
way
off. Now, when we talked to Mike O'Reilly on Thursday morning,
yep,
talk of the town, I mentioned the fact that Saturday we were going to be talking about interposition, or some, as it's sometimes known, interposition of the lower magistrate.
This is a good example of that.
This is a perfect example of interposition of the lower magistrate. It's also going on in some churches. And by that I mean there are churches who have, their leadership has chosen, A, to open and remain open, B, refuse to require mask ups despite the gubernatorial quote-unquote mandate, which it isn't. And by that I mean, an interposition is when a lower magistrate or a lower leader steps in between a tyrannical leader who has issued an illegal order and says, you will not be doing that here. Now, does that put the lower magistrate in danger? Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And that sheriff could suffer pushback from this. Very likely he will get some kind of pushback. What kind of pushback? Well, it depends. There will be people politically minded who will be digging for dirt on him. There will be other people who will say, you embarrass the governor, and therefore the Republican Party or whatever party he's involved in will be running someone in a primary against you.
Right.
And that's the most likely scenario.
Listen, former gubernatorial candidate has already started making noises. Not Mary Taylor. Who do you think?
Oh, off the top of my head, I can't think of it.
Jim Renacci.
Oh, of course, Jim Renacci.
Renacci is gearing up to primary Mike DeWine. Oh, if Mike's going to run.
Well, I was talking about the sheriff, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, the sheriff's going to be, but I'm just talking to you at state level.
Well,
Mikey's going to get trouble from his own party.
Where do I send a campaign check?
Well, let's hold that off because Jim Renacci's probably not much better on some things.
On some things.
And some things he's okay, but some things not much better. I'm hoping we're going to find a much better candidate to work with who would either take on DeWine, or if DeWine chooses not to run again, to take on Houston.
I like Mary Taylor, but she's not charismatic and she doesn't raise money well.
Yeah, that's the problem. Well, and there's a couple problems there, but yeah, that's one of the problems.
I'm tired of charismatic candidates.
And I'm sure she's probably sick of the fact that she put a lot of effort into running that race, only to watch Houston and DeWine and the party powers get behind the scenes and get them on the same ticket so that they could swamp her.
Yeah, the muscle people.
Because if it had remained a Houston campaign, a DeWine campaign, and a Taylor campaign, Mary Taylor would be your governor, right?
Yes, I think so. And she'd probably be a much, 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 much better governor.
I think she probably wouldn't be sitting here constantly telling us that she is our grandparent and we need to put our masks on everywhere we go.
Right. But folks, be cognizant that basically when your elders or your members of your board have said, we're not going to require the wearing of a mask, they're doing it not because they're thumbing the nose at the governor. What they're doing is saying, you don't have the power to require that.
Right.
And
because they say you're not required to wear a mask doesn't mean that you can't wear one either if you choose to
bingo.
Do so.
Basically, if you want to look up the doctrine, it's a Puritan doctrine that is actually a biblical doctrine. It's the doctrine of the imposition or the interposition of the lower magistrate. And you can see it throughout the Old Testament. Many times people stepped in with a king who was being a tyrant and said, you're not doing that here. David is a perfect example of someone who worked in a position of the lower magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
David had already been anointed king, but he wasn't elevated to the office yet. So he interposed between Saul and people who he was tyrannizing. Now, that being said, we're out of time. You know what we think? We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.